This meeting is now being recorded.
Shalom, everyone. This is Elliot Schoenberg speaking. I am the International Director of Placement for the Rabbinical Assembly, and I direct a career center for rabbinical students and for rabbis from the Jewish Theological Seminary, the Ziegler School of Rabbinic Studies, Seminario Latinoamericano in Buenos Aires, and the Schechter Rabbinical School in Jerusalem. I'd like to welcome everyone. This is Mocha Mondays. Our topic today is good interview questions and a good interview question process. I am delighted that we have two experts with us, two past chairs of search committees from Teaneck, New Jersey, Penina Grossberg, and Louis Stasis from Wallingford, Pennsylvania. Penina, why don't you take a moment and introduce yourself, please?
Sure. Thanks, Elliot. Shalom. I'm Penina Grossberg. We just completed the search in Teaneck's congregation, Beth Shalom, for our next rabbi. It was an exhilarating process, and I commend all of you for your own participation in this kind of work, which I know is exhausting but certainly rewarding, and I am happy to be invited and to help. I also wanted to just say that our process had the luxury of being extra long because during our we knew in advance that our long-tenured rabbi would be leaving. So we had the luxury of many months to anticipate and plan our search and our questions. So I just wanted to include that as a preface to my remarks because we were able to do an enormous amount of deliberation before jumping in.
And Louis?
Hi, I'm Louis Stasis from Congregation Ohev Shalom in Wallingford, Pennsylvania. I was co-chair of the search committee that took place beginning in the fall of 2008 and into 2009. As Penina said, you're in for a lot of long days, and but the work is exhilarating, and it really is it's the greatest contribution you can make to the continuing history of your synagogue. We also had a little bit of lead time. We knew at the end of August that our rabbi and his family had decided to make Aliyah, so we had a couple of months lead time that we might not have had otherwise, and it also, in a way, made our search, our introduction to our candidates easier because we weren't that wicked synagogue that got rid of their rabbi. We were in the search business because our rabbi had decided to make Aliyah. So,
great. Okay, so let me start with a softball and ask that the first question is, did your committee have a favorite question? And why? Maybe, Louis, why don't you begin?
Okay, well, I went back and looked back at our files, which was it was a very gratifying experience, I guess, because we had a successful conclusion to our efforts. But our favorite questions were really based upon issues that we had identified as being important to our congregation. So we asked the rabbi about his feelings on egalitarianism, but we also asked about the extent to which the non-Jewish spouse in a mixed marriage can participate in family celebrations in the sanctuary. And we also, one of the questions that we asked every rabbi was, how do you handle the situation where a congregant has a bat mitzvah reception and wants to start it before Shabbat is over? And we wanted to hear how the candidates reacted to those questions.
Was that a hypothetical for you, or was that a real issue?
It was a real issue. It was and is a real issue.
Right. Okay. And Penina?
So, thank you. I want to continue from where you left off, which is that we also found it very important to pose questions about the things that were most important to us. That said, we made very clear to our candidates and, well, first among ourselves, and also to our congregants, that there was going to be no litmus test issue. What I mean by that is if we asked a rabbi about his or her view on a liturgical detail or musical instruments or, aside from the things that are very core to conservative Judaism and unto our synagogue, nothing was a litmus test. So this was not a question of they have to give the right or wrong, we're looking for whether they're going to give us the right answer or the wrong answer on any number of controversial or other issues. But rather, we wanted a window into how they might think about those issues, particularly if they're controversial, how they would think themselves, how they would process them, and then how they would go about addressing them within the community. So while we did mention, some of the hot spots for us, we made clear that it was as a process question in terms of how they think about the issues and not a litmus test.
Great.
I also wanted to say that while we were very, very pointed and specific and also gave examples and asked for examples, we also opened most often with a very general question like, tell us about yourself and why you chose to become a rabbi. Now, that was not an invitation for a long exposition. We actually were careful about our time frame throughout. But we sometimes would say, for example, in 2 minutes, can you tell us about yourself? We felt that that would warm up the candidate, make them less nervous to speak as opposed to just fielding, questions right at the start, that would be an easy one to get them warmed up. And it would also give us a sense about how succinctly they speak and what they chose to say. So I think you want a balance between open questions and more – and general ones, and then more specific ones. And I also would point out that it depends at what stage of the process you're in. We had very different questions for the initial phone screen than we did for the more deep in-person interview. And I think it's worth separating out what you want to find out about the candidate at which stage. So what do you need to know to decide whether you want to spend more time with the candidate? So we had sort of the phone screen questions and then the in-person interview questions because there's too much you want to learn to get in any one interview.
And we had a similar process. We had a set of questions that that one of the co-chairs would ask the candidate on an initial phone interview, and we used that process to report back to the committee and come up with a decision on whether we wanted to have an interview with the entire committee. And again, I couldn't agree more that the questions you ask, you're never going to find that candidate who is in lockstep with you on every issue. In fact, our congregation isn't in lockstep with each other on every issue. So you really are asking process questions and kind of extrapolating from there.
So just so that we can be helpful to everyone, so every synagogue should just have received the latest publication of the Joint Placement Commission, Aliyah, which was sent out last week. And in Aliyah, this whole process is described. And in particular, there is a list of suggested questions that has been agreed to by the United Synagogue and the Rabbinical Assembly for each stage in the process. So from some of those details, you can go to Aliyah, and if you haven't received Aliyah or can't find it, you'll send me an email. We'll be happy to send it to you. Let me ask the reverse question, if I may.
Sure.
So was there a question, now that you think about it in retrospect, that wasn't helpful? Is there a question you wouldn't to say to other search committees, don't ask this question, not helpful?
I couldn't think of any. I went back and looked through our questions and the notes of some of our interviews, and I didn't come up with anything that I recalled us deciding to drop out of any of our future interviews.
I would say that your questions reflect on you as a congregation, and you want to be respectful and deliberate about how your questions are framed. And that while congregants are likely to be very intrigued to know about the family members of the candidate, about their personal practice, perhaps even how their gender affects their rabbinate, that those questions need to be framed in ways that are legal, appropriate, and if I'm not being clear, I'm happy to elaborate. We did not, I don't think, make those errors, but I would just caution other communities to think carefully, particularly so that there is no gender bias or no inappropriate questioning.
Right. Because you always will have somebody who wants to know the answers to those questions and those issues. So you have to be aware of that. You also, and this is kind of basic, you've probably realized this already, but you're being considered by your candidates as much as you are considering the candidates. So you want to be aware of that always as well.
So about the process, I'd like the point that you raised, Penina, about that your opening question wasn't meant to elicit a long response. In your minds, did you have an idea about how long the person should be answering question? And what happened, and what did you do if the answer was too short, you didn't get enough information, or the reverse, which I think is more common, that you were getting too much information or information that wasn't germane to the question you're asking and the rabbi was elaborating too much? How did you handle those situations?
We, as a committee, scripted our interview. What I mean by that is we worked hard to prepare questions in advance. We also only had, with the 14 members on our committee, almost every member listened to every phone interview and was present at every live interview. And while that might sound to you overwhelming, in fact, I think, simplified it by having one co-chair, myself or my co-chair, be the person to ask the questions, and everyone else was a silent listener. It's not a firing squad. It was not everybody getting to ask whatever was on their mind. There was an agreed-upon script. Now, when I say script, I don't mean that I read every question in the order that it was written, but I made sure to hit on the same topics so that for every candidate there was consistency. For example, now I'm going to get to your question, Ellie, about timing, but I think it's all related. We also made very clear at the outset of the call, well, first when we scheduled the call, we said we would like to schedule a call with you for 45 to 60 minutes. We are very respectful of the candidate's schedule and time and our own. We often had sometimes two or three candidates we would speak to in one evening. So we were very clear. We would say on the opening moments, you know, when the person got on the phone, we would reiterate, just to confirm, we've set aside 45 minutes for the call, and we will save some time at the end for questions. Part of that set the stage for all of us, but then it was also up to the rabbi. One rabbi said to us, well, I know we have 45 minutes altogether, but how many questions are there so I know how long to talk for? And that was an interesting window into that candidate's time management. And others, I think, we're not shy about saying, let's say they would bring up topics. We would say, perhaps if this interview proceeds to the next stage, we'll have an opportunity to delve in further. This is an initial interview to get a sense whether this is the right match. We never had if the person gave an answer that was too short, we had follow-up questions prepared. If they gave an answer that was too long, I did not hesitate to ask them to wait. But what I wanted, another tool that will make this more manageable, is to stick to the script. If somebody starts in with a fabulous story about Israel and camping and something else, a committee without a script might end off on sort of a tangent about those things, which while they may be very informative and telling, they're not necessarily what you need to know at this stage in the process. So I encourage you to tightly choreograph and orchestrate the interview so that you're getting what you need. I started by saying what it is that I want to know about the candidate. How am I going to find it out? And then, you're not going to believe this, but this is the thing that most surprised me. I had been a school principal, quite experienced in interviewing and hiring. So I didn't think I needed to practice giving interviews. But there were people on our committee who thought it would be a worthwhile exercise. And believe it or not, we took our script and we did a practice interview of a congregant who was a rabbi. And it helped us get a sense of the flow of the interview and the framing of the questions. And if you have an opportunity to do that kind of thing, that will help you anticipate the timing so that you are focusing your questioning and listening on the areas that are most important to you.
We did. We followed a very similar process. We didn't have quite as tight a time frame. We set it, our interviews up for between an hour and a half. But it was very much the same setup. We had one person who did almost all of the candidates' questioning. The rest of us were listening. We did have an opportunity at the end of the call for any committee members to ask questions and then for the candidate to ask us questions. But we set up a time frame. It was just longer than the one that that Penina used. But we had a script, scripted questions. We wanted to hit the same areas, if for no other reason than, we could consider how the candidates responded to all the questions so that it was essentially, as best we could, the same interview to each of the candidates. We didn't want to be put in a situation where, well, we like this candidate's answer on this situation, but we didn't ask the other three candidates the same question. So it is important to kind of stick to that. And we also, we had a committee member who was experienced and comfortable in interviewing, and she was willing to do it. Now, we never did multiple candidates on a night, but I was looking back through our notes where there was a week where Sunday through Thursday we had either an in-person or a telephone interview with a candidate.
Great. Thank you. Lewis, this may have been before your time. Did you use Skype? Was that Skype for people doing Skype? Then did you use Skype?
We did not use Skype. We talked about it. I was using it at the time because my son was spending the semester at Tel Aviv University, and I thought that this would be a great tool. But we couldn't get agreement among the committee members to do it, and we sort of couldn't figure out. Sometimes it was as basic as, well, do we position the camera on the woman who was doing the questioning? Do we want to get everybody in the camera shot? You know, what do we want? And it got to where I said, you know what? We're spending more time worrying about how we're going to do this, and we just moved on at that point. People just weren't comfortable with it. I think now it might go a little more smoothly.
And Penina, did you use Skype?
We were prepared to use Skype. We did not, in effect. We did not in the end, but for different reasons. We made a decision that we would give everybody a phone interview as the first step. The second step was an in-person interview that invited the person to lead davening, to give a Dvar Torah. It was an hour and a half of it was a two-hour evening. But given budgetary constrictions, we decided as a policy that before, in cases where we would have to fly in a candidate or go to considerable expense, that we would first do a Skype interview, and only after a positive Skype interview would we then bring them in for an in-person interview. And that was strictly to help manage our budget. But we also said we would never invite a candidate for Shabbat, you know, go to that decision before seeing them live. So Skype would never take the place of a live interview, but it would be an intermediate step to help us decide whether or not to fly the candidate in. In the end, we didn't need to use it.
Okay. So just that we sort of summarize this, more and more congregations are using Skype. More and more congregations at this point are comfortable with Skype. More and more rabbis are prepared to be interviewed via Skype. And it's in its infancy with everyone in the Jewish world in this kind of process. In the book that I just authored, Aliyah, there's a whole section on tips for doing a Skype interview. there's an appendix with some of the material that actually comes from the Skype website on things to check about the microphone and background and other things. And I think if Penina's suggestion to practice a regular interview is good advice, practicing a Skype interview is just as good in terms of advice, so that you're comfortable and you get it right and you figure out all of the different pieces. Candidates are prepared. I'm not sure I would say comfortable, but they're prepared to be interviewed via Skype. So tell me about Dvar Torah as part of the interview. Did you ask rabbis at some point in the either in the telephone interview or the person in-person interview to give a Dvar Torah? Did you give them instructions about it? What did you learn from it? How'd that go?
Well, we asked for a Dvar both on the telephone interview and at an in-person interview. Again, it sounds like we ran almost the same search process as Penina's congregation. On our telephone interview, we gave them a time frame of whether it was 4 minutes or 5 minutes or 6 minutes, whatever it was. But also when they came in to visit us in person, we also asked them to lead Mincha Mariv, whatever was appropriate at the time of the year, and to include a Dvar Torah either at the service or after we finished davening and went into the meeting room to again present a Dvar. And we thought that was important, and especially if they could, if they had the opportunity to give us two different teachings, then that was so much the better.
I think a Dvar Torah is a critical skill for a rabbi who's called upon to speak so often, often without notice, and I think you can learn an awful lot. In practice, we did not include it in our initial screening, and to be honest, I don't remember the thinking. I think there were other things we had to get at sooner, that we decided to get at sooner. We did ask for a Dvar Torah at the in-person interview, and we did always give them advance notice of 1 or 2 weeks, so that when we scheduled the interview, we said at our congregation we typically begin meetings with a Dvar Torah, which is true, and that we would invite that person to prepare something I believe we may have said on the topic of their choice for 3 minutes. And it was very telling. First of all, to see if they stuck to the 3 minutes, and secondly, of course, how they presented. But one of the things we were curious about is our congregation is blessed with a very knowledgeable membership, including among us 40 or so rabbis who are members of our congregation. So we were curious about how a rabbi could give a Dvar Torah that would be able to teach members from across the spectrum of backgrounds and skill levels. And so that was something that we were looking at. And we were better able to assess that once the person came for Shabbat, which is, the finalists. The number of finalists that came for Shabbat, we incorporated a number of teaching opportunities in big groups, small groups, and Dvar Torah. But at the interview questioning stage, we asked for 1 3-minute Dvar Torah in person with advance notice.
So let's just we're coming close to the end. We're not at the end of our half an hour slot for this, but tell me about the process that you use to pick your questions. What was the source of your questions? How did the committee come up with the questions that they felt were important and needed to be asked?
Well, Elliot's book, Aliyah, is an excellent starting place for all sorts of issues related to the search. We asked our entire search committee to read the book before our first committee meeting that we ever convened. And we also made the link available to our entire congregation so that they could understand the process. And in the back of that book, as Elliot mentioned, are a set of questions. That said, We didn't lift them out of the book and use them that way. What was critical to us was to figure out what the top priorities are for our congregation. And we determined, for example, that pastoral skills, and being a community builder were critical, critical roles to us. When I say, obviously rabbis fill many roles, but we weren't going to spend time during an interview speaking about fundraising experience if that was not critical to us. So we made sure to put front and center the issues that were important for us. So to take, for example, community building, we asked the candidates to give us an example of a divisive issue or a rift or a situation in their synagogue and how they addressed it. Not speaking hypothetically, but speaking very specifically. And we were able to elicit, again, their thinking process, their reflective capacity, about the things that we thought were critical. Pastoral counseling, to be honest, is much harder to assess over the phone, particularly because of confidentiality. We weren't asking for examples, but we did ask for them. We asked for sensitive situations, for examples without names, so that we could try to learn about the very things that were most important to us. And when it came to questioning, I mean, to be honest, the thousands of meetings that our committee had over 18 months included five or six that were dedicated only to drafting questions, practicing the questions, revising the questions, and changing the order. We also called on the skills of a professional on our committee who does interviewing and focus groups so that we were able to learn from her what might elicit the most rich answers.
We also used the questions in Aliyah as a starting point, and again, we asked all of our committee members to read Aliyah. We did not make it available to the congregation. Interestingly enough, we also had a focus group expert on our committee who helped us shape the questions and the interviews. But the appendices in Aliyah were really just beginning points, and we were able to adapt the questions that we were going to be asking because we'd been through the exercise of completing the RA's questionnaire, which certainly brought topics to the forefront. And so we knew that there were areas that we wanted to have addressed, and we were able to sort of, you know, draw on our own experiences, the experience of completing the questionnaire, and the examples that we were given in Aliyah. And you know, I'm sure that, you know, you didn't choose people to be on your committee because they weren't involved and articulate and able to contribute. So we tried to take advantage of the talents that led us to ask these people to become involved with us in the very beginning.
Terrific. So now let's sort of bring this conversation to a close. And I wonder, Penina, if you had any advice that you haven't given yet in your very thoughtful presentation, some last word you want to leave with everyone of advice about what to do in this process?
Yes, thank you, Elliot. What happens when the interview is over is very important, and I want to make two comments. First is, at the close of the interview, it is appropriate to say to the candidate, you know, thank you, and here's what you can expect now in the process. We always said that after the initial interview, they would hear with us within 2 weeks, no matter what. If we didn't have an answer within 2 weeks, we would get in touch with them anyway to tell them that. But I think that it's appropriate to certainly tell the candidate what comes next. Even more significant, after the candidate leaves the room or hangs up the line, you must, I think, it was very important to us, schedule debriefing time immediately following the interviews. Even when we had more than one interview in a night, we always allowed time to debrief as a committee. I think it's critical and can't be skipped. And during that debriefing, we used different models. We went around the room so everyone could talk and say something. We asked every member around the table to comment on the areas that were most important to us. And we used that as a basis then because there are so many people that we interviewed that it helped us sort of keep track and compare. And so I would urge you to do that and to take notes.
Again, I couldn't agree more. We always had a debriefing immediately after the interview. We generally had somebody who was taking notes so that, again, if on those rare occasions where somebody wasn't able to participate, they could catch up, but also so that we had a record so that we could go back 2 weeks later and keep everybody straight. But it is critical to keep your candidates informed and let them know what the path forward is going to be and stick to that. And also, this is slightly off this topic, but we periodically, of course, updated the congregation as a whole, so that they knew what was going on, so that they didn't, you're going to be asked every time you walk in the building or have any contact with a congregant, so what's new, and we just didn't want anybody to think this was a secret process, that they were as involved as possible. Again, understanding that there are certain confidentialities that had to be respected. Because you want your committee to be able to speak freely, and so that is important as well. So I guess what I'm saying is you want to keep your candidates informed, you want to keep your congregation informed as well.
So I want to thank everyone for their participation today. In specific, I would like to thank Mr. Louis Stasis from Wallingford, Pennsylvania, OF Shalom, and Penina Grossberg from Beth Shalom in Teaneck, New Jersey. You are both experts, and you presented as experts, and we're delighted, and thank you so much for your presentations today. This has been Mocha Mondays, Meditations on Career Advancement from the Joint Placement Commission. This has been your host, Elliot Schoenberg. Thank you very much for being with us today, and this concludes our conversation.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye.